Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts odds maker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC on Fox 20 event, which takes place in Chicago, Illinois. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC Fight Night 91 went 1-2 to lose 0.86 units overall. We won our underdog play on Daniel Omelinchuk, but lost our play on Ben Wen and our parlay that included Lauren Murphy. We also lost our free bet on Cody Fister for 1 unit. Back to the present, UFC on Fox 20 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Big Network Fox this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a heavyweight attraction between Luis Henrique, who is 8-2 with 1 no contest, and UFC newcomer Dmitry Smolyakov, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Smolyakov minus 170 to come back on Henrique at plus 130. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, our official sponsored sportsbook. Make sure you guys check those guys out. At Five Dimes, it's Smolyakov minus 160. The comeback on Henrique is plus 140. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and there is two-way action coming in this fight. I'm told that Smolyakov is actually receiving a little bit more action thus far. Now, of course, that could change as the fight gets a little bit closer here. But both these big boys are definitely going to get some respect from the public. Smolyakov, of course, is the hyped Euro heavyweight that's actually making his UFC debut. He trains with some decent training partners over in Europe. Overall, his resume is honestly a little weak considering he's fighting mostly Euro-level heavyweight fighters out there. So it's nothing to really – I guess brag about as far as the competition level that he's beaten. I mean, he's 8-0 undefeated. He's finished every one of his fights either by KO or submission. So the guy definitely has some finishing skill, and he's pretty good. I mean, overall, he's got a well-rounded skill set on the feet. He's got decent boxing, has some speed, got some power. I like his lead jab. I mean, he uses it well and has good accuracy with it. And he also shows some killer instinct once he has a fighter in trouble. He has the finishing ability to just flurry and end things. So there's a lot to like about Smolyakov in this spot. I mean, he's got a Greco-Roman wrestling background as well. And I believe in Russia, he was master of sport in wrestling. So he has the ability to take the fight to the floor. He's got knockout power to the feet. I mean, he's a hyped Russian prospect for a reason. The guy is definitely decent, but there is some question marks I have surrounding him. I mean, he's never been out of the first round. That's one. And again, I mentioned that his level of competition has been fairly weak, and he's fighting a guy in Henrique, which I think is actually pretty decent. I mean, even though he lost his UFC debut to Gano, which is actually fighting on this card as well, he won round one of that fight, and Gano has turned out to be a monster. I mean, a very difficult matchup for a lot of heavyweights in the UFC right now. So that loss isn't as bad as it looks, I think, for Henrique's debut here. And Henrique's another one of these guys that actually is a pretty well-rounded heavyweight. I mean, he's got wrestling, judo, jiu-jitsu to go along with a boxing and Thai background as well. So he's a very complete fighter. Really, on the feet, I think he's got some power. He's got some decent skill. He's got the ability to knock fighters out as well. He's got decent wrestling. He does look for takedowns. And on the ground, he has the ability to drop some bombs on you or even look for the submission. So Henrique is definitely a well-rounded fighter. And to me, even though Smolyakov is a hyped Russian prospect coming into this fight, this is almost a step down. I mean, again, Gano that he lost to in his UFC debut, I don't think Smolyakov is on that level right now. So for Henrique, I believe this is kind of a step down for him. And for Smolyakov, I believe that Henrique is actually a step up. So this fight definitely becomes interesting because I do think Henrique has the ability to win this fight. Now, of course, Smolyakov stuns him early on and flurries. I could see Smolyakov actually finishing the job here and getting Henrique out of there, but it does get interesting, especially if it gets past round one. I think Henrique is going to have the better cardio, and I think Henrique has more wins or more ways to win this fight as it goes as well. So I'm honestly leaning a little bit more towards Henrique in this fight. I mean, I know, again, the hype should be pretty decent or should be fairly realistic with this Russian making his debut. But from what I've seen from film, he does look good. But I mean, again, untested in my opinion against UFC level fighters, and he is going to face one. I think Henrique can definitely win some fights in the UFC heavyweight division. And, I think he's a good addition to the roster. And I think Smolyakov will be as well, but he's still a little bit raw for me. So with all that being said, I'm going to lean with the dog here. I'm going to pick Henrique to pull off the upset win over Smolyakov. I think it should be a good fight, tough one, but I got to lean with my gut and head, and it tells me Henrique is just a little bit more ready at this point.
My biggest concern with Smolyakov is the fact that he's been putting away people too easily throughout his career so far, competing in, you know, in Russia. And for the most part, he's able to either blitz people on the feet. He does have a lot of power. He's a good athlete. He has some explosion. Or he's able to, you know, just power bulldoze people and take them to the ground and then either beat them up on the canvas or work for a submission. So, I mean, he does have a very solid, well-rounded skill set, and he is dangerous. But, I mean, Luis Henrique, he's no joke. I really thought that Henrique was a blown-up light heavyweight when he was making his UFC debut, but he showed up. He had some good size. He's a good grappler. He was able to take and Gano down, which was incredible, and Gano has turned out to be one of the better prospects that the UFC has seen in the heavyweight division in years. And eventually he did get caught in the second round, but I definitely feel he's a threat. Now, the big question though is, if Gano couldn't put away Henrique in the first round, what happens if Smolyakov doesn't? Because I know Gano's, his conditioning is solid. Like he's able to go. And he probably could have been able to finish Henrique in the third round even. But Smolyakov, I don't know. Like, he seems like more of the explosive type that if he runs out of gas, he is just going to, just completely wear out. And I think that's where Henrique could shine, is, Smolyakov is not going to be as confident to utilize his wrestling and ground game because Henrique is a solid grappler with excellent Brazilian jiu-jitsu credentials and can probably sweep him or reverse him, maybe take advantage of some of the sloppiness because Smolyakov does use a lot of athleticism in his moves. And if Smolyakov does not put away Henrique early, and Smolyakov does not have the greatest technique, it's a lot relied on how good of an athlete he is on the feet, then I think he's going to panic a little bit, and I think he's going to run out of steam. So I agree with Nick. I think Henrique could be a live dog here. It's just all about whether or not Smolyakov can put Henrique away early, and I don't think he does. So my pick is going to be Luis Henrique. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Jim Ehlers, who is 13-2 with one no contest, taking on Jason Knight, who is 16-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Ehlers -270, the comeback on Knight +190. Right now over five dimes, it's Ehlers -200, the comeback on Knight is +170. A lot of these lines have been holding steady overall, but this is definitely one that has attracted some dog action from the general bettors out there on Knight against Ehlers. I don't know. I mean, I'm a bit surprised about that in some ways. I know Knight definitely is a talented guy. I mean, he's young. He's only 24 years old. He's got some length for the 145-pound division as well, and he's got some skill. I mean, the guy on the feet's not bad. He could do some damage with his length. I mean, he's got good technique. He's got skill. He's got a little bit of power to go along with it, but his best attribute for Knight is definitely on the ground. I mean, it's a submission game. Again, he uses that length well on the ground. I mean, he's dangerous. He's constantly attacking and looking for submissions against most fighters. Now, of course, he struggled a little bit against Kawajiri and got put on his back. In fact, this is what bothers me about Knight a little bit, is his willingness to pull guard. It's definitely a concern for me, because if he can't get the sub, he's given up position, which in turn is going to obviously cost him probably the round. Who knows with judges anymore? It seems like sometimes they give the round to the guy that's actually losing. But at this point, in this case, it should be Ehlers on top if Knight does get, you know, on his back or whatever, or even pulls guard, obviously, and Ehlers lets him work a little bit. And Ehlers does not get caught. He's probably going to win the fight by grinding him out. So I don't know. To me, I do see the potential in Knight. I think he's going to get better. And I just think overall, if he cannot basically sprawl and brawl in this spot here, he's going to be some trouble against a guy like Ehlers. Now, I think a lot of the reason why Knight is receiving action as well is because people are almost fading Ehlers. It's unfortunate because before he came into the UFC, I mean, Ehlers was a Cage Warriors champion. He fought in a great organization over in Europe, such as Cage Warriors, and had a lot of success. I mean, the talent level from Cage Warriors is actually pretty decent. It's what you kind of want to see a fighter get tested before he enters the UFC. I mean, a level like that is definitely better than, like, for example, the Smolyakov fight that we were just talking about before this. I mean, Smolyakov's resume outside of the UFC was pretty pathetic, but Ehlers at the same time was actually respectable making his UFC debut. So the guy had potential, had a lot of talent. Then he came into the UFC and he laid an egg. I mean, he's been horrible. I mean, his first fight against Omar was actually a pretty fun fight to watch. He got the decision, split decision win. But after that, I mean, getting that TKO loss to Skelly was pretty bad. I mean, Skelly has a little bit of power, of course. I understand that, but still, I think a guy like Ehlers shouldn't be that bad. And then, of course, his last fight with Cole Miller, it was a no contest, but he was looking pretty bad in that fight as well against the guy in Cole Miller, which I think stylistically Ehlers could have been doing better about. So I think just looking at what Ehlers has done lately, the public just doesn't respect him right now. And I think the dog action on Knight, a lot of people are more impressed with what Knight can do. But with all that being said, what it comes down to in this spot is Ehlers is a pretty well-rounded guy as well. If this fight stays on the feet, man, I mean, he's been getting rocked a little bit more. His striking defense is definitely a concern. And he just really hasn't looked that good. So I wouldn't be that confident at all. But I think Ehlers is a pretty tough guy to submit, and I think he will probably be on top if this fight hits the floor because I do think he's got better wrestling, and I think he's probably going to be able to grind out Knight along the way. So all the dog action that's coming in, I kind of understand why people are taking a shot fading Ehlers, but I'm going to go against the grain here, and I'm going to pick the favorite to win in this spot. I think Ehlers' wrestling and his control and his overall game should probably get him the win here. He probably grinds Knight out and gets the W. So that's my feeling here. But again, I mean, how much confidence can you have? I mean, Ehlers has looked pretty bad. So hopefully that turns around here and he looks a little bit better and shows us kind of the warrior that he was fighting before he came into the UFC. That's what I'm looking to see here in Ehlers. But outside of all that, I do think he probably gets the job done here and more than likely a decision win for me.
As Nick mentioned, Jim Ehlers, there's a lot of people that are fading him because of his poor performances inside the octagon, and you can count me as one of those people. I've not been impressed with what I've seen, especially recently. You know, Ehlers is just more known as a scrappy guy that can push a high pace, maybe pick up a takedown or two, get into a brawl. And I think that's just not the best strategy if you want to have an extended career, especially as an elite featherweight, which is a division just loaded with talent. Now, Jason Knight is definitely not on the upper echelon of the UFC featherweights. He had a short-notice UFC debut against Kawajiri. It didn't go well. Kawajiri just has stifling top control, and Knight is more of a submission guy that's too comfortable off of his back, and he wasn't able to get anything going. Now, against Ehlers, I don't think that'll be as much of a problem. Ehlers does have some wrestling. You know, he's accurate on about 42% of his takedowns, but I would expect that he would have a lot more issue with Knight on the ground because Knight has an extremely active rubber guard, and he's only 24 years old, you have to remember. Knight is improving every time we're going to be seeing him. He trains out of Alan Belcher's gym in Mississippi. Now, on the feet, Knight kind of focuses a little more on the kicking game, and where he really is strongest is on the ground. Most of his wins are by submission, and I can see Knight does have some offensive wrestling, but I don't know how well that's going to work out for him. Ehlers actually has some really good takedown defense. What I can see happening in this fight is Knight kind of utilizing his kicking game on the feet, which is mildly effective, trying to keep his distance there, and then maybe shooting in for takedowns. If he gets it, that's great, because him from top position is extremely dangerous too. And I can see him pulling off a submission from top position. If he doesn't get the takedown, I can see him giving up on the takedown, pulling guard, trying to work that rubber guard, a very, very active guard. He has a lot of triangle wins. He has some armbar wins. I think he can make Ehlers' life a living hell on the ground for sure, like just constantly defending submissions and sweeps. And on the feet, I think Ehlers' best bet is to kind of force this more into a brawl. Neither guy has good striking defense. Ehlers doesn't have a great shin, but I do think he's a much better offensive striker than Knight. So if he can keep this standing and kind of turn it into a firefight, Knight might wilt. And if Ehlers is able to get takedowns and avoid Knight's submission and sweep game, then he could get something going there too. So I understand why Ehlers is the favorite, but I also understand why some action is coming in on Knight, because Ehlers just does not have that top pressure that Kawajiri had. And I can see Knight utilizing that ground game very effectively. So I'm going to side with Jason Knight. I think that he could either pull off this submission, or he could sweep or get some takedowns and win a decision as well. So I'm slightly leaning the youngster here, Jason Knight. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Hector Urbina, who is 25-9, taking on George Sullivan, who is 17-5 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Sullivan minus 215, the comeback on Urbina plus 165. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Sullivan minus 200, the comeback is plus 170. So line margins again have tightened up. There is two-way action coming in on this fight. Obviously, probably not a ton of action coming in to either guy, because let's face it, I mean, both of these guys have been in the sport for quite a while. Urbina has been one of those kind of savvy veterans that's been on the scene for a long, long time. And, it's good to see him get a shot with obviously the Ultimate Fighter show and then into the UFC, because the guy has gotten better. He's put the work in, and for regional kind of vet, he's again getting his shot at the big show. And I think he can surprise some people along the way too. And which, you know, at times he has that ability to finish fights. He has a good sub game. Urbina is pretty much a well-rounded fighter overall. He's got good wrestling. Considering, I mean, I'm saying good depending on his opponent and his matchup and styles, of course. He's got a good sub game. He's even aggressively dangerous on the feet as well. So Urbina is pretty much a threat everywhere. You just, you don't see a ton of respect for Urbina because, again, he's just not that dominant fighter in any particular area type of situation there. Now, Sullivan, on the other hand, I'm scratching my head. I don't know what to say about him. I mean, one fight, the guy looks like the ultimate grinder. In the next fight, he looks like junk. I mean, he looks terrible. It's awful what you see from him. I mean, Yakovlev knocking him out, it really shouldn't happen, right? Right? I mean, Sullivan's a pretty tough guy. Then, of course, to me, what really – I was disappointed in him in that Means fight. I know Tim Means is – man, I mean, he's the type of guy that you don't really want to be in the octagon with because of what he brings to the table, which is everywhere. I mean, Means is just an aggressively dangerous fighter in all areas. So I can understand it, but – it seemed like he was afraid in that fight, and he just let Means have his way with him. So that was the first sign of I guess, trouble for Sullivan, in my opinion, that, man, if this guy isn't as good as I thought he was. I figured he would be a little bit more, I guess, showed a little bit more heart, a little bit more toughness along the way. Now, of course, he bounced back, had a decent performance against a guy like Waters. But then again, I told you the Yakovlev fight was a head scratcher as well. So it's a roller coaster ride is what I'm trying to get at with Sullivan. It's up and down. It's inconsistency. It's I don't know. I'm just not sure what Sullivan's going to show up here. I mean, is he better than Urbina overall? I think he is, but I'm not that confident. I mean, which Sullivan's going to show up here? I mean, Urbina could possibly pull off the finish here. I mean, I don't know if Sullivan's getting to that point where he's 35 years old, even though in MMA years at the highest level, he hasn't had a ton of fights, but you know, maybe it is finally catching up to him and he's slowing down a little bit. And he, you know, I'm not sure what's going on with Sullivan. So that roller coaster ride is definitely a concerning spot for me here. And Urbina is the type of fighter that probably doesn't get enough respect, but he could make life tough for Sullivan. Now, with all that being said, I still got to favor Sullivan a little bit in this spot. It's just not going to be, again, it's not going to be a confident pick. If you guys are betting this fight, I don't know how you could confidently lay the juice these days, especially in against even a dangerous, somewhat dangerous opponent in Urbina either. So this is a tough one. I mean, I'm going to lean towards Sullivan because I think he probably will get top position in this fight at times. I mean, he's got good ground and pound. He could be effective in the striking game as well. I mean, there's a lot of good things to like about Sullivan, but I just don't trust him anymore. And until he shows me that he can rattle off three or four solid wins and he shows that toughness and heart that I thought he once had, I'm not going to trust him. So I am going to pick Sullivan to win this fight. I think he should be a little bit better than Urbina, but man, this is, again, I hate to say it, but it's not a really ultra confident spot. So my pick is going to be Sullivan, and I don't know what should be kind of a head scratcher type of performance. Maybe he looks good. Maybe he doesn't. We'll see.
Yeah, Hector Urbina, George Sullivan, they have slightly similar skill sets, although Urbina is a lot more focused on trying to get a finish. Urbina has a decent guillotine choke. He pushes forward pretty aggressively. But Sullivan, he's kind of the ultimate grinder. He moves forward aggressively on the feet, but doesn't really strike that well. He doesn't really strike that quick, but he strikes kind of effectively by keeping his opponent on the defensive. And then where Sullivan really shines is whether he can push his opponent into the fence or he can pick up some takedowns. And then he kind of wears you out, grinds you out, and he can pick up finishes with a ground and pound on the ground. He can finish you along the fence. He has a bit of pop once his opponent is kind of stationary, stuck against the fence or on the ground below him. Now, Urbina is going to be the quicker guy, and there is a concern here with Sullivan in the fact that his last fight, I mean, he did not look good. I mean, Yakovlev just put him out quickly. That kind of came out of nowhere. So I am definitely a bit concerned about that. Urbina does have a little bit of power and some submission ability. So if Urbina wins this fight, it's probably because he takes Sullivan out quickly. But if he doesn't, I can see Sullivan going back to the grind and then just slowly kind of washing over like the tide coming in and just washing away Urbina's and just completely taking away his will to fight. And that's when Sullivan is at his best, when he is just demoralizing his opponents. And I think that's what he does here. I'm still concerned he gets caught because, I mean, Yakovlev doesn't have insane power and he put him out pretty easily. So Urbina could do that too, but statistically speaking, I'm going to rely on Sullivan grinding this one out. So Sullivan is my pick. Now, sticking with the welterweight division, we have Alex Oliveira, who is 13-3-1 with one no contest, taking on James Muntasri, who is 9-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Oliveira -265 to come back on Muntasri +185. And right now, looking over at five times, it is Oliveira -225. The comeback is at +185 still. So line margins have tightened up. Dog price stayed the same here. Not a ton of heavy action coming out of this fight either. And it's kind of tough and tricky as well. I know a lot of people do respect Oliveira. I mean, the guy has definitely been performing well. And again, a little bit of a roller coaster ride for him, I think, overall. I mean, but the level of competition he's faced has not been easy at all. I mean, he's faced, I mean, let's face it, Cerrone loss, for example, that triangle choke was not a really huge shocker. I mean, underground fiddling with Cerrone's triangle is a task for anybody. And then, of course, that submission loss that he had to Burns early on when he was making his UFC debut, I believe, he was winning that fight and then got submitted late in that fight as well. So, but the Burns loss, I mean, Burns is the type of grappler that could submit. If you get on the ground with him, you're pretty much toast. So that loss is acceptable. And again, Cerrone could catch you as well. That's not even a shocker as well. But along the way, outside of that, I mean, he's looked pretty good. So Oliveira is definitely a solid fighter. Originally, he was more well known for his striking because the guy's long, he's got power, he's got that killer instinct, he definitely has a good striking game. But now more so, I mean, I think his wrestling is really showing up pretty decent as well. He's had some takedown defense from the rip, but now he's starting to go offensively with his takedowns. I mean, if you look back at his KJ Noon fight, it wasn't going too well for him as well as he liked early on in the feet. So he needed to get that takedown. He got it down and then he sunk in the choke and ended it there. That's shows me good fight IQ. It shows me a lot of good things about Oliveira that you like to see. But outside of that, he still has his flaws. I mean, striking defense, I think, is one. I mean, he's definitely hittable. We've seen that throughout his fights now as well. So offensively, he could definitely dish it out. He's tough, I mean, as far as chin taking it as well. But he can get rocked. He can get hit quite a bit. And Muntasri is one of these guys that you do not want to tangle too much on the feet with Muntasri. I mean, the guy has nasty KO power. That's what he does best. And talk about wrestling. He's been working, drilling that wrestling a ton. His takedown defense is pretty good overall. I know he's been put on his back at times in his UFC career thus far as well. But overall, he's not an easy guy to get down, despite Zafir in his last fight getting him down. When he got back up, I mean, obviously Muntasri showed what he could do. And that's the type of fighter Muntasri is. I mean, heavy hitter, precision striking, can definitely deliver the knockout blow. And then, of course, Mutasri, he's been working in, as I mentioned, on his wrestling. He has a little bit of a sub game as well. So this is not an easy fight for Oliveira at all. I think Mutasri is definitely a good test. And Mutasri, again, along the same lines as Oliveira, I think he's shown some really solid spots in his career, but then at the same time has had those performances like Kevin Lee. Now, of course, Kevin Lee's not a bad loss, but if you look back, I mean, the way he got the submission early in round one, you'd like to see a little bit better or a little bit more of a battle or test from Mutasri, or, you know, to kind of stifle some of that off, and he wasn't able to. So if Oliveira gets Mutasri down, takes his back right away, I think it's a wrap again. Oliveira could probably end things here. But Mutasri is able to kind of fend Oliveira off as it goes, and he's able to get this fight standing or keep it standing longer, he definitely has a shot to win his fight. So I think it is a dog or pass situation. I'm going to lean towards Oliveira because I think what he's shown so far in his wrestling could cause Mutasri some problems early on. And if, again, Oliveira gets his back, I think he's going to probably follow that same game plan that he had against KJ Nunes when Nunes kind of made him go to that game plan. I think he's going to have to do that early on against Mutasri now. And Mutasri, if he could hang on, he could win at this fight. I think it's possible that he could maybe possibly, even though he does fade and gasses as the fight goes on a little bit, I think he could still do enough damage along the way to possibly steal a decision against Oliveira, or he could possibly finish him. So if this fight hits the scorecards, I'm expecting a very close competitive battle, close decision. So it is a dog or pass situation. But as far as the pure pick goes, I still got to think Oliveira again. He's going to be trying to get those takedowns. He could utilize the striking and be effective as well. So anywhere the fight takes place, Oliveira should be solid at least. But still, you know, he needs to really focus on his ground game, I think, for this fight to have a little bit more success. So that's why I'm slightly leaning towards him. I think his ground is going to be probably the edge over Mutasri here. It's a dog or pass situation for sure. So my pick is Oliveira, but my money, if I had to bet this fight, would definitely be on the dog.
This fight is a bit tricky. I mean, Alex Oliveira and James Mutasri, they're fighting at welterweight. Both have fought at lightweight before. Oliveira typically only usually fights welterweight when he has a short notice fight. But this time around, I guess he had no problem stepping in and taking on Mutasri. Now, Mutasri moved up to welterweight permanently for his last fight against Zafir. Now, he did get taken down early, but once he got up, he was nasty, great finish, lot of power. On the feet, if this is just a pure stand-up fight, I can definitely see Mutasri giving Oliveira some fits. Neither guy has Oliveira does have a bit of a reach advantage, but I think Mutasri is a bit more of the technical striker. He can mix things up. He has some unique kicks. And Oliveira, I think he's the more well-rounded fighter. So he can mix in the takedowns. He can potentially work for a submission. He has a bit of a sneaky ground game. Now, obviously, the really good ground fighters like Cerrone and Burns can eat him for lunch on the canvas. But against somebody like Mutasri, who has definitely had his issues on the floor, I think if Oliveira mixes it up on and maybe takes his fight to the clinch, maybe drags it to the ground, just keeps Mutasri guessing, he can get in a decent position. My other main concern with Mutasri is conditioning. I mean, UFC debut against Joe Ellenberger, he was exhausted. He clearly could have been able to finish that fight and just could not put anything on his punches late, and it ended up costing him. Alex Oliveira, he can push a high pace. He can go hard. He has a good gas tank. So I think the best route for Mutasri is to try to put this one away early, because the longer it goes, I think Oliveira could start to take over and use the rest of his game a little bit better. And he might even be able to get some stuff going on the feet pretty well in the second and third rounds if Mutasri does not hurt him early. So I'm actually leaning Alex Oliveira here. I think that he does use the well-roundedness of his game, and if he can work a jab pretty well, that reach could become an important part here, especially with the 5-inch reach advantage. So I'm slightly leaning Alex Oliveira to pull this one off. Now, moving on to the Fox preliminary card, we have a lightweight contest between Michelle Prezeris, who is 19-2, and JC Cottrell, who is 17-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Prezeris at -260, the comeback on Cottrell +180. Right now it is Prezeris. -235 control is +195. So again, line margins tighten up a little bit. Better price on the dog right now, but two-way action coming into this fight. And it is another tough fight to bet. I mean, you have a debut guy in Cottrell. He's coming into this fight on short notice, of course, but he last fought and won at Legacy 56 at featherweight. And that was a featherweight fight. Now I believe he's fought as high as welterweight at times, but he is more of a featherweight type of fighter. Now, Prezeris, as we all know, is a pretty powerful guy at lightweight as well. So that's going to, I think, come into play here. But overall, getting back to control real quick, he's a solid regional type of fighter that has a pretty impressive resume, actually, for, again, regional circuit. It's a lot better than a guy like Smolyakov we were talking about earlier. So he's got some decent wins. Cardio might be a question mark since it is on short notice coming into this fight a little bit. So it might be a little bit of a concern as well as the fight goes, because I have noticed in some of the longer fights that Cottrell has gone, I mean, he does tend to slow down a little bit. So short notice will probably magnify that overall. But getting into his skill set, Cottrell is one of those guys, another guy that's young and well-rounded. I mean, on the feet, he's got decent footwork. He moves well. Usually throws at least two strikes when he attacks, which I like that. I mean, it's not one of those just, you know, look for one punch and stop type of thing. He throws at least two or three things in combo, which is good. I mean, he utilizes his left hook really well, and he often leads with his inside kicks, leg kicks as well. So he mixes everything up on the feet pretty good. And then at the same time, this guy has a wrestling background, and he goes for takedowns, and he's got decent takedown defense, and his ability to scramble back up to the feet aren't bad. So overall, there's a lot of things to like about Cottrell. And with all that being said, you wonder why he's even a decent underdog against Prezeris. It's because, you know what? Prezeris is a beast, man. I mean, he's fought some very talented fighters thus far. And even though he's literally, I mean, on the short end of the stick a lot of times when he's fighting some of these guys, he's fighting some bigger guys. He's fought, of course, at welterweight as well, but even at 155, I mean, he's only 5'6". Many of the fighters that he's faced thus far have been huge. I mean, look at Lazaro, for example, in his last fight. There's a big size difference. But Prezeris has the ability to get the fight to the ground. He's a great grinder. I mean, his top control is definitely good. He drops him ground a pound. And his ability to finish the fight by submission is there as well. So he's got a lot to like about him, especially on the ground. But what has been a little bit more impressive for me with Prezeris is he's getting a little bit more comfortable striking. And he's the type of fighter that with his short, stocky frame, he actually has a little bit of power too. So even though he's not really well known for his striking, you can't sleep on his striking. Cottrell has to be careful on the feet with Prezeris. So he's basically the savvy vet that's coming into this fight that has the takedown ability and has the potential to kind of control and dictate the tempo of the fight and where the fight goes. That's why he's favored over a guy, a very talented fighter, I think, in Cottrell. So Cottrell, if he moves back down to 145 after this, I think he could win some fights for sure. I mean, he does, again, have that kind of ability to compete in the UFC, and I think he belongs on this level. But facing a guy like Prezeris in your debut on short notice is kind of a tough task. So with all that being said, I do think it's going to be probably a pretty competitive fight. Cottrell will definitely show up and perform relatively well. But I think as the fight goes, Prezeris will start taking over. Prezeris will kind of grind him out. Even though Prezeris, there is a concern, I should mention this. I mean, his cardio is not the greatest either. He does tend to fade at times as well. But I still think here with a full camp and with the situation against Cottrell, really, realistically, he's fighting a featherweight at lightweight on short notice. I mean, he should get the job done here. So I think Prezeris probably ends up grinding Cottrell out and winning this fight. So I'm going to pick him, but another cautious spot as far as the betting window goes. Be careful out there because you never know. I mean, Cottrell definitely has enough talent to make this fight interesting.
Cottrell is definitely a unique prospect, but my biggest concern is that he's stepping in on short notice and he's typically a featherweight. So even though he is going to have a bit of a height advantage over Prezeris, who is a kind of shorter, stockier, lightweight, I think he's going to be at a serious strength and physicality disadvantage. Both fighters actually have similar skill sets. Cottrell's biggest advantage is on the ground. He has a good high school wrestling background, gets fights to the floor, and then submits his opponents in a variety of submissions. Prezeris is a very underrated grappler in terms of getting takedowns, and once he's on top, his opponents are usually in big trouble. He can stay on top. He's active, has a pretty good ground and pound, and then can mix in submissions as well. But for the most part, he likes to stay on top and wear his opponents down. Now, on the feet, Prezeris, he's not great, but he does have some pop. He, against Mirbek Taisimov, he held his own on the feet there, backed Taisimov off. I mean, I know Taisimov was sick and they have their excuses and everything, but that is a fight that I am always going to go back to, the fact that he was able to pull that one off. And he faced a long striker in Valmir Lazaro in his last fight and was able to pull that one out too. It was a close decision, but he still got it. Now, against Cottrell, what I see happening here is Cottrell being a little too confident in his own ground game, and then when Prezeris gets some takedowns, which I'm sure he's going to, then Cottrell is probably going to be a little too willing to fight off of his back. And that's where I see Prezeris shining. I can at least see Prezeris winning the first two rounds. He's had conditioning issues in the past, although Cottrell has had issues as well. So maybe they both run out of steam a little bit in the third round. Now, on the feet, while Prezeris does throw big bombs to try to close the distance, Cottrell, he kind of more stays on the outside, looks to counter-strike a little bit. He has a decent kicking game. He's actually hurt opponents with head kicks and gotten takedowns or finished fights off of that with submissions. So that is something to look out for. Prezeris will have to watch, try to block some head kicks. But for the most part, Cottrell is not that dangerous on the feet. In his last fight for Legacy, Cottrell actually got chewed up by some leg kicks from his opponent, was hobbled pretty bad, but was able to utilize his ground game to win that fight and take the decision. And that wasn't that long ago, so you know, I'm sure he's probably still sore a little bit even from that, because I mean, he took some damage. And Prezeris is fresh, he's got a full training camp. So, and he's the bigger fighter in terms of weight and strength. So I see Michel Prezeris pulling this one out, probably by a submission or just a decision. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Kamaru Usman, who is 7-1, taking on Alexander Yakovlev, who is 23-6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I have an Usman -245, the comeback on Yakovlev +175, and right now over at Five Dimes, it is Usman -255, the comeback on Yakovlev is +215. So again, same situation. Line margins have tightened up a little bit. There is more action coming in. I mean, they told me that Usman is getting put in parlays a little bit more, and I'm not really surprised by that. So he's drawing a little bit more action, but this is a decent spot, because, I mean, you gotta respect Yakovlev, what he's been able to accomplish thus far in the UFC. The UFC has not given him easy fights thus far. I mean, he regardless of weight class, I know he dipped down, of course, to lightweight. Now he's back at 170, which is probably better for him. Obviously, the weight cut was too tough for him, but the guy has faced decent competition and he's done okay. I know he's had some mixed results as well, but I think Yakovlev is one of those guys that can really push Usman to another level here, because Usman, of course, we all know he's just a beast as far as grinding, getting the fight to the floor. I mean, the Ultimate Fighter winner, the wrestling, he's able to basically bully people around, get the takedown, have success there. He's powerful enough to do some damage underground as well. Even a stand-up is not bad. And he is coming off a very hard-fought battle against Leon Edwards, which I think is a very tough win, man, for a lot of people, because Edwards is one of those guys that can sprawl and brawl, and his striking is definitely legit. So to have a win over a guy like Edwards is very impressive. Now, of course, Usman is stepping in on short notice here for LaFleur, so he's not going to have as long of a camp as Yakovlev here. But I still think that, I mean, basically what you're going to see in this fight is Usman look to get Yakovlev on the ground, control him, kind of grind him out. Yakovlev obviously going to want to sprawl and brawl, make things interesting. On the feet, it should be close. I mean, Yakovlev is pretty technical. Obviously, he's got some power. He's coming off that, we talked about earlier a little bit, that KO win over Sullivan in his last fight. So his confidence is definitely riding high, especially, I mean, he's coming off back-to-back wins. I mean, Gray Maynard, whatever you want to say about him, even if he's not in his prime right now, still, for a guy like Yakovlev, you can kind of chalk that up on your resume and be proud to get a win over a guy that has that much, I guess, respect throughout his UFC career. And then again, coming off that win over Sullivan. So a lot of good things to like about Yakovlev. I think his confidence is going to be high. He is a tremendous grappler in his own right. He has a good submission game. On the feet, he is a southpaw. He's got some stuff you got to deal with Yakovlev that is not an easy task. So even though Usman is coming off a pretty hard fought battle in his own right and a respectable win, I think this is presents kind of a different type of challenge for Usman as well. But overall, I do think that he is going to be the stronger fighter. I think he's going to be able to be the bully in this fight here. I think he might get tagged up a little bit, and he's got to be careful, because if Yakovlev, I could see one way he does lose this fight is Yakovlev taking his back or something like that. I could see Yakovlev maybe possibly submitting Usman here, or maybe catching him early on, you know, with his strikes. But I think overall what I have more confidence in is Usman basically bullying Yakovlev around, getting some takedowns along the way, maybe maintaining it on the ground long enough that he's basically going to steal some rounds. So I think this fight probably does hit the scorecards. Anything, I mean, as far as being, I think, a little bit more confident with anything in this fight, obviously I lean towards Usman, but I think more than anything, it probably heads over, because I think Yakovlev is tough enough to withstand whatever Usman has to throw at him. And I think if there is a finish inside, it's probably Yakovlev pulling off the upset. So with me leaning towards Usman, I think it does probably go over and hits the scorecard. So maybe check out that total if it's within range still. But overall, I am going to lean towards Usman. I think that he probably does enough to win a 29-28 type of competitive decision. And Yakovlev is going to be respectful and compete well in this fight. But I just think Usman's style and his grinding efforts are going to be a little bit too much for him. So I'm going to pick him to win.
Yeah, Kamaru Usman is a very smart fighter. Good fight IQ. He does not screw around. Now, in his last fight, he was facing a really good striker in Leon Edwards. So what did he do? He took him down repeatedly and stayed on top of him for almost the entire fight. It was a brilliant game plan. It took Edwards completely out of the fight, and it was an easy win, a real easy win against a very dangerous fighter. So against somebody like Yakovlev, who isn't quite as dangerous as Edwards on the feet, Usman might get a little cocky here and want to test out some of the stand-up he's probably been working on. But, I mean, if he really wants to be smart, he needs to go right back to what brought him here, which is elite wrestling. He is, in my opinion, a top five wrestler in the entire welterweight division, if not one of the best. Like, that's how high I think this guy's ceiling is in terms of wrestling. Once he adds the rest of his game, I mean, he's going to be extremely dangerous. But for now, he can get away with just taking people down and staying on top of them. He has a very good explosive takedowns. And then once he gets on top of you, he has stifling top pressure, and it's very difficult to buck him off. So Yakovlev does have some power. I mean, obviously the Sullivan fight, and then he had Gray Maynard in a lot of trouble in their fight, that lightweight. So Usman will definitely have to be cautious, and he can't just charge right into a knee or something. But as long as he sets up his takedowns properly, Yakovlev has had issues. Even though he has a bit of a grappling background as well, I definitely feel like if Usman wants to get the takedown, he is going to win that battle. And Yakovlev has had issues with opponents out grappling him. Nico Musoke won a lot of grappling exchanges. Damian Maya, you know, took Yakovlev out behind the woodshed when they fought with his grappling. So as long as Usman fights smart, uses the takedowns, gets top position, I don't see how he loses this fight. So I have to side with Kamaru Usman, even though he has taken it on relatively short notice. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Darren Elkins, who is 20-5, taking on Godofredo Pepe, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Elkins -245, the comeback on Pepe +175. And right now, this line, again, I was talking about earlier on with the Ehlers night line. This is another one similar to that. It is dog action coming in on Pepe in this spot. And I do think there's a reason for that. And it is stylistically, it's a tough matchup, man. I mean, Pepe is one of those guys that he's a wild, aggressive finisher. I mean, he's definitely capable of ending fights. Obviously, you know, even on the feet, I mean, the guy is dangerous, flying knees, whatever. I mean, he throws with some power. He throws with the intent to kill, obviously, out there. I mean, he wants to get the job done anywhere the fight takes place. I mean, that's the kind of aggression he has. But that aggression can obviously lead to some mistakes along the way. He could get put on his back, especially with a fighter like Elkins. I mean, Elkins, you know, I mean, he could definitely get under a punch, get the takedown, and then make life miserable for Pepe. But the problem is with this fight for Alkins, stylistically, Pepe is even good on his guard, in his guard off his back, man. I mean, he's obviously dangerous there as well. I mean, he's constantly attacking again. It's that aggression, but it's aggression from Pepe, especially, with his jiu-jitsu game and on the ground that is definitely technical and effective. So Pepe is a very dangerous guy to have on his back and to really grapple with or even mess around at all with on the ground. So it is kind of a tough fight for Elkins. Now, of course, Elkins overall, I think, has been pretty solid throughout his career. I mean, he's only lost to top-notch competition overall. And I mean, and this is a typical fight that he should win, but typically what you like to see or what Elkins does is grind people out, get the fight to the floor, push him up against the cage. His striking is getting better. It's definitely improving some, but he's the type of fighter that needs to get on top of you and just kind of grind you out. Can he do that against Pepe? I think he can, but again, it's going to be kind of a risky situation. So I do understand why bettors out there are taking a stab at the dog here, because I think it is another dog or pass situation, and it's not an easy fight stylistically for Elkins. I honestly wasn't sure if Pepe would get that kind of respect, though, from the betting community, and obviously he did early on at least. Now, this line will probably creep back up a little bit possibly. We could see a drop if heavy sharp action comes in on Pepe as well, but overall, I think it is kind of a tricky fight. I mean, it's either going to be Elkins kind of grinding Pepe out. Now, I wouldn't even be surprised to see Elkins land some bombs from the top and knock Pepe out. I mean, if any weakness in Pepe's game is definitely that chin. I mean, he's been put out off his back before, of course, by some heavy hitters, though, and I'm not sure Elkins kind of fits that resume. But at the same time, you never know. I mean, Elkins drops a couple elbows. Pepe could go to sleep there as well. So Elkins, I think, is going to look to grind out Pepe. I think he should be able to. If he doesn't get caught, he's obviously going to probably win the decision on the scorecards here along the way. And I have to think that he will be prepared enough, at least, and hopefully his fight IQ is smart enough, since I'm picking him to win this fight, that he can stay out of danger against Pepe. But I wouldn't lay the juice. So those of you guys that came in on the dog, I do understand. I respect it. I'm just not so sure it does play out the way most people think, with Pepe kind of winning this fight inside. I'm going to pick Elkins to still win, but again, it is a dog or pass situation.
Darren Elkins will definitely have the wrestling advantage here. I mean, he is able to pick up a lot of wins throughout his career by just completely grinding out his opponents. I mean, he is one of the all-time great grinders. Is like, literally, his picture would probably be in the dictionary next to it. And that was very effective in his last couple fights against guys like Rob Whiteford, who wanted to stand and bang, and Chaz Skelly, who wanted to mix things up with submissions, with his stand-up. Elkins was able to just wear these guys out and then win the last two rounds for sure and take home a decision. He's not a great finisher. He doesn't have very good submissions. He doesn't have great knockout power. He's a little bit. And he has a pretty good chin. I mean, those are all the classic qualities of a guy that is going to use his wrestling and is going to be active and is going to neutralize his opponent's strengths. Now, Godofredo Pepe, you know, he was a guy that I thought was not going to be sticking around in the UFC. It looked like he had chin issues. It looked like he was kind of a one-trick pony with his submission skills. And that was just going to be all she wrote once he got knocked out a couple times. But he has really turned it on. I mean, he had a nasty first-round knockout win against Noed Lahat. Then responds by pulling off a quick submission against Deshaun Johnson. And then most recently, although granted it was a year ago, Andre Feely, he goes out there and submits Andre Feely extremely quickly. So this guy is aggressive. He looks for the finish constantly. He has some power. He's explosive and he can pull off submissions off of his back. He has a very good guard. So I think Darren Elkins is going to have a lot of trouble here. I mean, this kind of reminds me of Elkins's fight in Brazil, where he was kind of able to stifle Lucas Martins against the fence, looking for takedowns, but then just kind of grinded him out a little bit against the fence, missing out on a bunch of takedown attempts, but he had the position and he was landing some short punches, some dirty boxing and stuff. That's probably Elkins' best path to victory, is push around Pepe and maybe wear him out that way. Because if he takes him to the ground, I mean, he could get in a lot of trouble in Pepe's guard. And if he gives Pepe a lot of space, I think he could get himself kneed in the face from a flying knee or kicked in the face. And Pepe's punching is coming along too. He's really started to fill out his frame after, you know, being kind of the scrawny underdog on that first season of Tough Brazil. So I think Darren Elkins is going to have his hands full because of the constant threat of the finish from Pepe. And I think that at some point Pepe might actually catch him. So I'm going to side with Godofredo Pepe. I think he pulls this one out. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have a bantamweight contest between Frankie Sanes, who is 11-3, and former title challenger Eddie Wineland, who is 21-11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Sanes -185, the comeback on Wineland at +145. Right now, looking over dimes, it is currently Sanes -160, comeback is +140. So 5 cent drop on the dog. Sanes is a little bit tighter as far as margins go. It's a tough fight, man, because tell you what, a couple years ago, there's no way that Sanes would even be favored in this fight. I mean, Wineland would be the man to beat in this spot here, but he's coming off a unanimous decision loss to Caraway, and then before that, he got KO'd by Eduardo. So he's lost 3 out of 4 overall heading into this fight. Again, I guess decent competition, but that's not what you want to see in Wineland. I mean, he's too good for that, honestly. So again, it could be a scenario where the guy is only 32 years old. He's actually the younger fighter, believe it or not. I mean, Sanes is 35. He's the older fighter, but in MMA years, that's not true. And I think Wineland is hitting that spot where now he's had a little bit of time off. So maybe he's had enough time to kind of recoup and get himself back into form a little bit. But I mean, overall, it just seems like, I mean, Wineland should not be getting outstriked. I know Caraway has definitely made some improvements in his striking game, but in that spot, I mean, it's tough to see Wineland actually losing that way. So there's a lot of holes right now in Wineland's game. And I think Sanes is a tough guy, right? I mean, a tough spot to be in. I mean, if you're coming off 3 out of 4 losses overall in your career and facing a guy that's kind of on the rise, even though he's 35 years old, Sanes in MMA years, again, he's kind of a little bit younger than that. Of course, he's coming off a very hard fought, close decision, loss to Faber, actually. I mean, he performed a lot better than people anticipated in that fight. And that's against Faber. And you know what? You can say whatever you want about Uriah Faber, but outside of that title picture, I mean, the guy is tough to beat. So if you're hanging with a guy that basically will eliminate everybody else outside of the current champions and you're competitive enough to be that kind of fighter, then that you get a lot of respect as well. So I think Sanes is definitely a very talented fighter. He's 3-1, I believe, in his UFC career thus far, and it's against solid competition. So they're not doing any favors at all. And of course, he trains with the likes of Cejudo, so that only helps him all around as well. I think, of course, especially with his wrestling type of game, and that's why you see a lot of decent wrestling from Sanes as well. So what this comes down to, honestly, even though despite the actual ages, I think Sanes is kind of on the rise a little bit, of course, in the bantamweight division, and Wineland's kind of on the way out. So it's hard not to pick Sanes in the spot, but the line is competitive enough because honestly, again, Wineland can win this fight. I mean, he's dangerous enough. He's got a ton of knockout power. Sanes has been knocked out in his career. He has been rocked before as well. So Wineland catches that target, he can put Sanes out for sure. And if it hits the scorecards, I'm sure it's going to be a competitive battle as well. But if it does hit the scorecards, I think that Sanes will probably do enough to edge Wineland out, stay a little bit more consistent, a little bit busier throughout the entire fight. Again, wrestling is going to be interesting, but Sanes could win that battle as well along the way, I think, there. But overall, I mean, just kind of hard not to lean with Sanes, I think, in this spot. So I know Sanes also obviously could maybe – he's got enough knockout power to test that chin of Wineland these days as well. So there's a lot of ways this fight can end. I just think that Sanes probably does enough to probably pull off a very competitive, close type of decision, 29-28 type of decision, I think, overall. And who knows with the way the judges score things. But I do lean a little bit more towards Sanes. But again, it is a tough fight to bet because, as I mentioned, I mean, if this was a couple years back, Wineland would actually be favored coming into this fight. So are we maybe disrespecting Wineland a little bit too much? I don't know. We'll see, I guess, soon enough. But I am going to pick Sanes to win this fight.
My big issue with Eddie Wineland is he just did not respond well to getting put away by Hayden Barrow. You know, he was looking good in his title opportunity. Then he ate a spinning back kick to the face, got put out. Yeah, he picked up a win over Eve Jabwe, but the next two losses, I mean, Johnny Eduardo put him out quickly, and Eduardo's a good striker, but that came out of nowhere. That's one of the biggest upsets in UFC history. And then even worse was the performance against Brian Caraway, because you would think if Brian Caraway won that fight, it was because he got takedowns. It was because he used his submission game. He used his grappling. Caraway didn't land one takedown that entire fight because Wineland was so gun shy that Caraway outstruck him, actually landing 9 more strikes over the course of 3 rounds. And being the aggressor, Wineland was kind of sitting back and trying to counter, and it just didn't work for him. Historically, Wineland is a counter striker, but what he kind of does is it's something unique. Typically, he puts the pressure on his opponent, moves forward aggressively, and then forces them to engage, and then that's when he counters. And he has big-time knockout power. But he didn't do that against Brian Caraway. Maybe he was concerned about the takedown, so he didn't want to, you know, move forward aggressively. But the exact same thing is going to be in the back of his head here against Sainz. Again, he's fighting a grappler, and if he does not get his stand-up going, he's going to be in big trouble here. Frankie Sainz is an extremely talented wrestler, and he gets really good fighters to the floor. I mean, you look at the Yuri Alcantara fight where he pulled off a huge upset, basically won all 3 rounds, especially the last half of the first round, and then he especially won the rounds 2 and 3. Sainz has a good gas tank. He pushes a high pace. His stand-up is not terrible. I mean, the only person that's really beat him up on the feet was Uriah Faber, and that was only really for 1, maybe 1.5 rounds when Faber had him hurt and tried to swarm him. And even then, Faber hurt him, like, gassed himself out a little bit trying to put Sainz away. So, Sainz is very tough. He has a good chin, and he has a high motor. And I think those are all qualities that right now kind of neutralize Eddie Wineland's game. So, if Sainz is able to put that pressure on, if he's able to secure a couple takedowns, I can see Eddie Wineland getting frustrated in a hurry. Even though he's from the Chicago area, he's kind of the hometown boy, you know, and he just hasn't fought in a year ever since that Caraway fight. And I'm definitely concerned that he's possibly in a steep decline. I mean, you got to remember, this was the first bantamweight champion in the WEC history. I mean, this goes way, way back to when he won the title in 2006. So that was 10 years ago. So, you know, he's 32 now. He possibly is on a decline. And even though Sainz is older, he's a lot younger in fight years. And with Wineland being knocked out in 2 of his last 3 losses, I think he still could be a little bit gun-shy here, and I can see Sainz taking a decision. So my pick is going to be Frankie Sainz. Now, dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Felice Herrig, who is 10-6, taking on Kaylin Curran, who is 4-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Herrig -130 to come back on Curran -110. And the line has flipped. Right now it's Curran -115. The comeback on Herrig is -105. So not really drastic. I mean, it's basically one of those situations where it's a pick 'em and you could slightly lean it either way and it'll probably flip back and forth type of situation here. But early action is more so on Curran. I mean, more of the bettors out there are backing Curran. More, I think, of the picks are towards Curran as well. Everybody kind of counting Herrig out. And I understand. I mean, I've been one honestly throughout Herrig's career that really thought she was a little bit overrated, honestly. I mean, for quite a while, I think that she's good. I mean, she's well-rounded. She's definitely has competed against some of the best possible fighters she could out there, and she's been successful and at least hung with some fighters. It's just she was getting a little bit too much hype. So the hype is finally gone with Herrig, and now it's kind of changed tone a little bit where it seems like Curran is getting a little bit too much respect. And I was one that when Curran made her UFC debut, I definitely saw the potential in what she had. I mean, she was fighting Paige VanZant and she started off extremely well against VanZant. And I really was expecting her to do better in that fight. But that was when I was kind of honestly disrespecting VanZant. I didn't think at that time Van Zandt was going to be as successful or as good as she really ended up being. Now, of course, Van Zandt has suffered a loss since then. But still, what I'm saying is Curran was the type of fighter I was expecting good things from her, and she kind of ended up wilting under the pressure of Van Zandt in that first fight. So it kind of was a head scratcher a little bit. It made me think, okay, well, Curran's still raw. She still has a long way to go. She's going to improve a little bit and she can still be a force. I really thought she'd get the job done against Chambers. It was a perfect fight for her to win. I mean, Alex Chambers really, is she really UFC level, especially at the weight class? There's a lot of arguments you can make about it. I mean, Curran definitely outmatched her. She was winning that fight. She was on her way to an easy victory on the scorecards, and she got submitted. She got caught, and that was a head scratcher. So from then on, I mean, back-to-back fights where she wilts under pressure, in one fight, she ends up getting caught in a fight that she was dominating in. It just made me think, man, this girl is definitely raw still. Then, of course, she came back and got her first win in the UFC in her last fight against Kagan, which you got to give her credit, definitely. I mean, she performed well enough to win that fight, and it was definitely a big confidence booster, but it is what it is. And right now, even though I think that Curran is a very talented fighter and she's still young enough and she's still going to be improving. And especially now that she's got her first official win out of the way, I think her confidence is going to be there and her ability on the feet is definitely offensively, at least it's good. I mean, she can do some damage on the feet. She's got a good wrestling game. She does damage ground and pound wise. She's aggressive. A lot of good things to like about Curran, but there are some issues still. Her cardio is one of them. I mean, she fades as the fight goes on. So she has to address that cardio a little bit. And of course, the second is her fight IQ and her sub defense. I mean, she should not have lost that fight to Chambers. And on the ground, she does at times put herself in a problematic spots. And what I'm saying all this for is Herrig, again, she is starting. She finally lost that respect or that, the betters in the MMA community kind of overhyping her. She's lost that a little bit. But the one thing she is a proven veteran, in my opinion. I mean, Herrig is obviously a pretty decent striker. Again, she's not going to overwhelm you at times. It depends on her opponents. I mean, she could definitely outstrike a lot of women at 115 pounds. Herrig's wrestling is definitely up to par that she could out-wrestle a lot of women on the ground as well. And she can also obviously win by submission. She has a pretty well-rounded game. So Herrig overall is pretty solid, and she's a savvy vet. She's faced better competition than Curran coming into this fight. So what I think happens in this fight, Curran is kind of more of a front runner. She's going to come out strong. I think she's going to really put on a pretty good show early on. But as the fight progresses, I think she's going to give Herrig the opportunity, and Herrig is going to probably pounce on it and end up finishing the fight. I think she does pull kind of a Chambers. Now, I don't think it'll be as drastic of a come from behind victory for Herrig. I think she's going to be a lot more competitive in this fight throughout. But I think Herrig at some point probably does catch Curran making a mistake, and she makes her pay for it. And if it does hit the scorecards, I think it's going to be close enough, especially with Curran fading a little bit. I know you could say similar things, I guess. I mean, if you look at the Van Zandt fight for Herrig, I mean, as that fight went, Herrig wasn't doing much at all. I mean, Van Zandt definitely took control and took over that fight, but so Herrig wasn't as impressive as you'd like to see. But in this spot against Curran, I think Herrig will be the fresher of the two fighters, and I could see her winning the late rounds, winning round two, winning round three possibly as well. So a tough fight. I think it's going to be a competitive fight. I do think that Curran has more potential and especially more upside at this point of their careers, but I'm going to go against the grain. I mean, a lot of people are picking Curran to win this fight. I understand it. I'm just not confident in her. I mean, she's, again, the type of fighter that she showed me how she can lose fights. So until she shows me that she gets on a little bit of a streak here, that she could be a little bit more consistent with her cardio and her fight IQ and her sub defense, I'm not going to pick her, especially over a savvy vet. So I'm going against the grain. I'm picking Herrig to pull off the win. I think she does eventually catch Curran along the way. If not, maybe she pulls off a close decision. Tough fight, but I am going to go against the grain and pick Herrig.
I think this fight will be pretty competitive, but my main issue with Felice Herrig is she took a lot of time off after that last loss to Paige Van Zandt, over a year. And while, yes, she's a friend of former champ Carla Esparza, and she does do her training and everything, she's never been the greatest athlete. And while her game is improving, I mean, she did showcase improving ground game in her win over Lisa Ellis, but I just don't quite think that it is going to continue to keep going up. I think she's kind of plateaued overall as a fighter. I mean, she is, you know, 31 years old, and you don't really see women at that age still getting way better over time. And now Kaylin Curran, on the other hand, has a very bright future. I mean, she had a competitive bout against Paige, especially the first round, and before slowing down. And then obviously she blew the Alex Chambers fight. She was up two rounds, made a mistake, got caught in an armbar. But then against Emily Kagan, she actually kind of weathered the early storm. She kind of pulled the opposite. Kagan went out too aggressive, and then she took it, and then Curran took advantage of her opponent, who started to slow down. So I think that her conditioning is getting better. Maybe now that she's got her feet wet in the octagon, she's doesn't push so hard that she runs out of steam. I think she can pace herself a little bit better. Curran isn't a great striker, so I can see Herrig getting the better of her on the feet for sure. But if this fight goes to the ground, while Herrig's grappling is improving, I wouldn't be shocked to see Curran get the better of the scrambles and wind up in top position. My one concern is if Herrig pulls off like an armbar or something, maybe she can catch Curran and Curran will panic and tap and not quite make the technical escape. That's my main concern here, because I don't think Curran gasses in this fight. I don't think that Felice Herrig is going to take control or take over at any point. I just think Curran can get those takedowns. I think she can close the distance, avoid extended striking exchanges, and I think that she can win a decision against Felice Herrig, who I do still feel is either plateaued or potentially even on a decline after not fighting in over a year. So I'm going to side with Kaylin Curran. Now, moving all the way up to the heavyweight division, we have Francis Ganeau, who is 7-1, taking on Bojan Mihajlovic, who is 10-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Ganeau -705, the comeback on Mihajlovic, +435. Right now, Ganeau is -700. Mihajlovic is actually +500. So line margins again have tightened up a little bit. Line dropped a little bit with early dog action, and then it's kind of creeped back up a little bit. You know what, man? Mihajlovic is not bad. I mean, he's making his UFC debut. He's a savvy veteran. His experience mostly against lower level competition, though, again, in Europe. It's just tough because Ganeau, I think, is seriously, I mean, Brian mentioned it earlier in the podcast. He is one of the best heavyweight prospects we've seen in a long time. So Mihajlovic definitely has his hands full here, because Mihajlovic is really one of the smaller heavyweights. He could be fighting, I think, a light heavyweight into this fight. So you got one of the bigger heavyweights in Ganeau taking on one of the smaller guys. And I mean, just the physicality of Ganeau alone, I think it will do enough to make life miserable for Mihajlovic. And I think that's one problem he's going to have off the rip. But overall, getting into Mihajlovic a little bit, he's well-rounded. As far as skill set goes, he has some striking, he's got some wrestling, got a sub game as well. On the feet, he throws kicks often. It's almost his go-to comfort zone for him, I think it seems. He likes to throw those kicks to keep at range a little bit and do some damage. And then he likes to close a distance and go for body lock type takedowns. That's basically how he gets inside and goes for the takedown. So he's a well-rounded fighter that does have knockout power, but also looks to take the fight to the floor and do some work there. He's got some speed and power to go along, you know, with everything that he's got. So, and he does have some pretty good ground and pound when he gets top position as well. But I don't know. In this fight, is he really going to be able to control Ganeau on the floor? Is he going to be able to get those takedowns and keep him there? That's the thing. Maybe he gets one early on, but Ganeau's going to get back up and on the feet, man. I mean, Ganeau is seriously going to have a huge reach advantage in this spot. Ganeau's going to be, again, the stronger fighter. I think Ganeau has shown that he's working on his takedown defense, and his ability to get back up once taken down is getting a lot better. I mean, his win over Blades last time, Blades is a legit fighter. I mean, I know he was making his heavyweight debut, but that guy has a little bit of everything, and Ganeau really took it to him. I was really impressed. I mean, that's kind of what sold me on Ganeau a little bit, and realistically believing that he is definitely a guy that can keep on improving and one day make a run towards that title. I mean, he is definitely going to take out a lot of people along the way too. So just unfortunately for the Russian here, he's just going to get, I think, just beat in almost every aspect because of the size of Gano. I don't see him lasting too long here. I think that Gano is probably going to win this fight by knockout, and a lot of it is, I mean, again, skill wise, technically speaking, maybe Mihajlovic has an edge over Gano, but especially at this point. But I know that this is kind of a big number to see a guy as raw as Gano come out and be this huge of a favorite, but I think it's justified in this case. I just don't see too many ways Mihajlovic wins this fight. So I'm going to pick Gano to win this fight, probably by stoppage, probably by knockout, probably early on. I mean, there's not much more to say in this. Gano is a beast. I think he keeps some momentum going here. And man, the heavyweight division definitely has to take notice and watch out, because I think after this fight, they'll probably give him somebody that will make an impact for him and another win or two away from getting into the mix, maybe even breaking into the top 15 rankings for Gano. I mean, the guy, again, future is bright for him, and he's young enough that he could definitely climb the ladder and make an impact here. But a loss here would definitely set him back, so he needs to get the W here. But obviously, as a huge favorite, he should get that done. So I am going to back and pick him, whatever you want to say. Gano should get the W here.
I'm going to keep this one short and simple. Francis Gano is possibly the best heavyweight prospect I've seen in many, many years. And Bojan Mihajlovic is making his UFC debut too late. He's in his mid-30s, he has a game that is way too dependent on body lock takedowns that are not explosive, that are not that incredibly technical, and he is super undersized. Gano has 10 inches in reach against this guy. He's 5 inches taller. He is just, I mean, this is a battle of two different weight classes. Mihajlovic is going to be dropping to light heavyweight after this fight. I guarantee you that. And I just don't see any way Mihajlovic wins. I mean, Mihajlovic, his entire game pretty much revolves around getting takedowns, getting top position, and then beating his opponent up from top position. I don't see him getting takedowns, and even if he does, I think Gano just kind of just will say nope and then get back to his feet. So I think at some point, Gano just starts just destroying Mihajlovic on the feet, and then he puts him out the second that Mihajlovic decides he doesn't want to get punched in the face anymore. So I think this one's going to be over in a hurry, and my pick is definitely going to be Francis Gano. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have Edson Barboza, who is 17-4, taking on former Strikeforce champion Gilbert Melendez, who is 22-5. And this will be in the lightweight division. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Barboza -265, the comeback on Melendez +185. Right now it is -225 Barboza, the same comeback on Melendez at +185. So line margins tightened up a little bit, two-way action coming out of this fight, and it seems to be a fair line, and it's holding steady for a reason. I mean, you know what? Melendez coming off the PED suspension, if you look back at his recent performances as well, Melendez at one time was probably the best lightweight in the world. Underrated. I mean, I'm glad he came over to the UFC. It was just unfortunate, the timing of everything. I wish he would have came over a little bit sooner. But with all that being said, I do think we see a little bit of a decline for Melendez. I hope I'm wrong, because again, he was honestly one of my favorite fighters to watch at lightweight, because he's such a well-rounded fighter. I mean, he's just a warrior. He brings a lot of pressure. He has a striking ability. He's got a wrestling game. He's got the submission game. He's just the total package. But he's had so many wars throughout his career. He's been around the sport for so long as well. I mean, even though he's only 34 years old, again, MMA years, he's beyond that a little bit as well. So there's question marks with Melendez, and especially based on his last few performances. I mean, the Pettis fight, okay, Pettis was champion at that time. So you can understand. I mean, he was an underdog going into that fight. He was looking to get the takedowns or whatever. But the problem is, in that fight, Melendez was taking some punishment before he even got choked out. I mean, he was getting lit up a little bit by Pettis as well. So if you look closer in that fight, I mean, it wasn't a good thing. And then obviously Melendez got the choke, and what's a surprise, because Melendez's sub defense is great, but just the way that worked out. And then even in his last fight after that, obviously with the current champion Eddie Alvarez. So it doesn't seem like a bad loss, right? I mean, shit, he lost to the guy that's champion right now. So how bad is that? But he had a great round one, and then he let a guy, basically a one-eyed fighter in Eddie Alvarez, win the last two rounds against him. I mean, he looked like he slowed down. He looked like he was getting tired a little bit. Melendez had cardio for days in the past, even with a hard fought battle. I know that, you know, he was trying to finish Alvarez. You can say what you want, but typically speaking, Melendez would not gas in that situation. And if he didn't, if he stepped on the gas a little bit, he could have won that fight against Alvarez, but he lost. He led it to the hands of the judges and he lost that decision. So you got to give Alvarez some credit for that. But that being said, I mean, I just don't like what I see from Melendez. Now add all that up to time off with the suspension, everything like that. And he's facing a guy in Barboza that is one of the best strikers in the lightweight division. And he's always has been. I mean, Barboza is just lethal on the feet. And realistically, Melendez in a fight like this would probably want to go for the takedowns, get him to the ground and try to work his sub game and try to work his wrestling, kind of grind Barboza out. But who's done that to Barboza, really? If you get Barboza down, it's for basically a split second. He gets back up to the feet. He's hard to hold down. His submission defense overall is pretty good. I know he's been subbed a couple times, but really, it's when he gets rocked that happens on occasion, okay? And that is one issue that Barboza definitely has. And even though he's looked better in that aspect and his defense has been a little bit better, Barboza still worries me with his chin, because I'll tell you what, Melendez definitely has enough power left in the tank that he could catch Barboza's chin and knock him out. So even though I am going to pick Barboza to win this fight, Barboza has to be careful. Again, Barboza's been fighting against pretty decent competition. I mean, Pettis wasn't able to knock Barboza out, so you would think that he should be okay against a guy like Melendez. But you never know. I mean, he's fought guys like Felder, wasn't able to knock him out. Michael Johnson wasn't able to knock him out. And both those guys are heavy hitters as well. But again, all it takes is one shot on the button. Melendez has that experience, has that accuracy that you never know. He could catch him. But outside of that, I'm not sure how Melendez wins. If he cannot catch that chin of Barboza, how really does he win this fight? He's not going to outstrike Barboza on the feet. He's not going to be able to get the takedowns here in this spot. And then from what I've seen defensively from Melendez recently, hasn't looked good. You cannot have that defense against a guy like Barboza. So to me, all signs are indicating that Barboza probably gets the win here. Outside of Melendez catching that chin and putting him out, it's not going to be a good thing for Melendez. I think Barboza does win this fight, probably wins on the scorecards, but if Melendez isn't careful, he could suffer the first knockout loss of his career here. I don't want to see that happen because, again, I'm a huge fan of Melendez. He's been a warrior throughout his career. Tons of respect for him, but Barboza is just a tough matchup for a lot of people. And I think especially if you're an aging veteran that's coming off of a suspension and has looked and showed signs of a decline. So Barboza gets the win for me.
Yeah, this fight's really interesting because on the feet, Gilbert Melendez has excellent boxing, but Edson Barboza has elite striking, possibly the best overall pure striker in the entire division. I mean, he has magnificent footwork, excellent use of distance, a stiff jab, brutal leg kicks, and then he can mix things up with a really unorthodox attack too if he wants. I mean, he can wing those crazy spinning attacks. I mean, you name it. So Edson Barboza definitely has that ability to outshine Melendez, who is a little bit more focused on strictly boxing. Now, everywhere else, Melendez has a shot. I mean, he originally was a wrestler, and that's where he made his name for himself, was being a grappler first and being aggressive and going after his opponents in that department. And against Edson Barboza, it wouldn't hurt for Gilbert Melendez to go back to his roots here. Now, granted, Barboza's chin is not that great. Obviously, he's been hurt by a jab from Donald Cerrone. He got knocked out by Jamie Varner. We all know the story with that. But I will say that Barboza's chin is a little bit better now for whatever reason these days. And he also, his defense is better. He's not getting caught with some of those random shots. Like Anthony Pettis could not get going. He was completely befuddled against Barboza. Like, it was a brilliant game plan, just completely stifled everything that Pettis was trying to do. And if Barboza is able to get that going against Melendez, he can just chew him up. Now, Melendez is dangerous in the clinch. He's dangerous on the ground. He does have some wrestling ability, which is actually really shocking to see him get out grappled like that by Eddie Alvarez in the second and third rounds of their fight. But if Melendez is able to get that going, then maybe he can pull this out. But my biggest concern with Melendez, honestly, is the fact that he hasn't fought in a year because of a steroid suspension after the Alvarez fight. So he tested positive for something in that fight, and he still lost to Eddie Alvarez. So after winning the first round. So I'm definitely concerned. What happens if, you know, Melendez has been on that stuff his whole career, and now we see a, like, kind of a deflated version of Gilbert Melendez? That's definitely something you have to keep in the back of your mind as well. So overall, you just have to kind of go with the momentum. And right now the momentum is with Edson Barboza. So I'm picking Edson Barboza to defeat Gilbert Melendez, potentially by knockout or at least winning a decision. Now moving on to the main event of the evening in the women's bantamweight division. We have former champion Holly Holm, who is 10-1, taking on Valentina Shevchenko, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Holm -350 to come back on Shevchenko +250. Early on, it was all Holm action. I mean, this line was bet up to over 4-1. But that's significantly changed. I mean, as we get closer to fight, and especially today, it seems like there's been a lot more heavy action coming in on Shevchenko. And it's all the way down. Right now, Holm is -220. The comeback is Shevchenko at +180. So significant movement in this fight. I do understand it, for one. I mean, I know that Holm is a fantastic fighter. I mean, her win over Rousey was just one of the best performances I've ever seen, especially in that situation, that spot. I mean, what everybody had Rousey as, I mean, the invincible fighter, no way she loses that. You know, anyway, the storyline behind that home fight is just tremendous. But she did then, in turn, lose to Miesha Tate. Now, again, I know she was winning that fight. She was having success on the feet. In round two, got a little bit iffy. And then obviously in round five, she got finished. So Holm, if that fight hit the scorecard, she wins that fight. I think there's no doubt about that. So arguably, she is still one of the best, or the best, in the women's bantamweight division. Now, you can't take anything away from Nunes, but still, I mean, Holm's right up there. So I understand with the majority of the people kind of liking Holm in this spot, and especially with Shevchenko coming in and losing to Nunes, and just basically getting out bullied and muscled and taken down and controlled a little bit more by Nunes in that spot, even though she started coming on late. And if it was a 5-round fight, obviously I think Shevchenko would have won that fight. And I believe Holm even said something like that as well. I mean, if she had more time to work, she would have probably got the win over Nunes. And Nunes is the current champion right now, and I believe that. So Shevchenko is definitely a talented fighter in her own right. Holm has to be cautious in every aspect of this fight. I don't think it's an easy fight at all. So I do understand the dog action coming in, because Shevchenko, obviously, she's got a striking background. I mean, the girl has technical skill on the feet, has enough power to do damage on the feet as well. A very smart fighter, intelligent, has decent defense overall. I mean, there's a lot of good things to like about her. But on top of that, even though she did get out wrestled, out grappled a little bit, especially early on the first couple rounds against Nunes, she does have some pretty outstanding wrestling. She's got a sub game to go along with it as well. I mean, she's a finisher. So Shevchenko is a very dangerous opponent for Holm. And I think strike for strike, even though Holm's going to be a little bit longer, she uses her movement well. She works from the outside well. And obviously she has some power to go along with it. A lot of people, at one time at least, a lot of people were kind of underestimating Holly Holm's power. Well, now that's not really a big question, because she definitely could do some damage along the way. But I think Shevchenko can strike with Holm, and I think she could have the ability to actually get the takedowns up against the cage, maybe get this fight to the floor enough. It's not going to be easy, though. I know Holm has outstanding takedown defense. I mean, look at Ronda Rousey. She tried to get the fight to the floor. She could not, and we've never seen her really fail as much as she did in that fight, obviously, and that's why Holm got the win. But, I mean, that was pretty impressive. Even though Miesha Tate did get Holm to the ground, again, stylistically different type of matchup, Shevchenko, again, is a different type of matchup out of the three. So this is an interesting, intriguing matchup. Holm knows, I think, that she's in for a test here against Shevchenko as a dog. It's a tough fight. I realistically have been going back and forth as far as a pure pick goes. So there's no doubt about it. It's a dog or pass situation. I felt that way. I'm actually a little bit disappointed that the line has dropped some. But still, it is going to be a tough enough spot where there could still be some value left, even though at the price at +180 on Shevchenko against a fighter like Holm. Because again, I think she could strike with Holm. I think she can out-wrestle Holm a little bit as well, even though it's not going to be easy. And I think obviously her submission game is better than Holm. But with all that being said, Holm is going to be motivated. She's going to be game. She's going to know that she's got to stuff some of those takedown attempts from Shevchenko. And the one thing I should mention about Shevchenko that bothers me a little bit is she does not put her foot on the gas enough. I mean, she gets tentative at times, and you cannot be tentative. It's going to cost you to fight, obviously, as well, from time to time. So Shevchenko has to put that foot on the gas if she wants to have success against Holm, and at times she doesn't do that. So I think Holm could stay a little bit more active, use her length, use her reach, kind of stifle the takedown attempts for Shevchenko along the way. That's the way she wins the fight, but I do think that Shevchenko is going to make this a dirty fight, an ugly fight. If she gets Holm in trouble on the ground, obviously now Miesha Tate has kind of shown the whole division how to beat Holly Holm. Take her back, even though Holm's defense, even especially round two, was pretty decent, she is beatable on the ground, and Shevchenko has a way to do that as well. So I don't know. I am going to probably, again, I've been going back and forth as far as a pure pick goes. I'm going to pick the dog, though. Again, I'm going to go against the overall public opinion on Holm winning this fight, and I'm going to take Shevchenko to probably pull off the upset win and kind of go against the grain. But as of right now, I mean, this fight, again, all the action coming on Holm early on, and then all the dog action recently on Shevchenko, the sportsbooks are probably, believe it or not, going to be fairly even on this spot, on this fight overall, but I still think Shevchenko is a dog or pass situation, and I'm going to actually pick her to win this fight. Tough fight. Obviously could be wrong here, but I think Shevchenko is one of the best at 135. I mean, she's definitely title contender worthy, even though she suffered that loss to Nunes. I think she can rebound here nicely with a win over Holm, and I think that it's possible she gets it done. So I'm going to pick Shevchenko to defeat Holly Holm.
And I just don't quite see it. Shevchenko's game is a lot more reliant on closing the distance. She has more of a Muay Thai style game, so she likes to mix in knees. She likes to clinch. She is able to strike from distance as well. I mean, she was able to utilize that pretty well in the third round against Amanda Nunes, the current champ of their fight. And if that was a 5-round fight, she could have been the champ. I mean, if Shevchenko wins this fight and gets a rematch, I could see her winning, mainly because Nunes' gas tank is so bad and Shevchenko can push the pace. But the problem with Shevchenko is, honestly, her takedowns are kind of judo-esque, like a lot of body locks, maybe some trips, some throws. It's just all about closing the distance, and it's not explosive wrestling-style takedowns, single legs, double legs, like Miesha Tate's were against Holly Holm, where she was able to time a kick perfectly and step inside and get a takedown. That's not how Shevchenko's takedowns are going to work. So Holly Holm, if she just fights a similar strategy to how she did against Ronda Rousey, I think she'll be in good shape. Now, obviously, Shevchenko is not going to be nearly as aggressive as Ronda, who was just like a bull, just charging forward, trying to get in Holm's face, land big power punches, and look for takedowns with her judo. But she still does follow the similar premise of get in your opponent's grill, maybe push them against the fence, work knees in the clinch, and then work for takedowns and maybe land some strikes along the way, some dirty boxing. So if Holm is able to stay on her bicycle, fight from the outside, she has a big advantage in that department. She's the taller fighter. She has a slight reach advantage. She has very, very good kicks, as we know. That's what won her the title against Ronda. So I really think this is going to be a kind of a battle of wills here, where Shevchenko is going to try to get in Holm's face, and Holm is going to try to just counter and back away. And that's where Holm is at her best. So while I don't expect Shevchenko to come charging in and just eat repeated, jabs to the face, I do think that Holm will land enough over the course of 5 rounds to win a decision here. And I don't see Shevchenko just taking Holm down at will. Like, she's not a great wrestler. She has some ability. She had some nice takedowns against Sarah Kaufman, but that was Sarah Kaufman. Sarah Kaufman does not have good footwork. She allows herself to get backed into the fence repeatedly. I don't see Holly Holm doing that. Holly Holm utilized expert game plan every time Ronda got too close or started to back her towards the fence, she circled away. I think Holly Holm is trained too well and is too good of an athlete and has too good a conditioning to allow that to happen, and her footwork is too good. So I think Shevchenko is going to get frustrated here, and I think Holly Holm is going to be able to land enough jabs and straight punches and kicks over the course of 5 rounds to win a decision and get her title shot back. So my pick is going to be Holly Holm. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC on Fox 20. Now, if we have a free play to give out for this event, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of any free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.